This is an AM 770 CHQR podcast of The World Tonight with Rob Breckenridge.
Big international story today. Certainly, it's a very big story where our next guest is. The death of U.S. Senator Ted Kennedy, longtime U.S. Senator, obviously part of the Kennedy family. And that name still, in 2009, carries a lot of weight. There was once a time when Ted Kennedy was considered perhaps a shoe-in for the presidency. And had things gone a little differently, maybe instead of Jimmy Carter, it would have been Ted Kennedy. A number of things happened, notably the tragedy at Chappaquiddick and the death of Mary Jo Kopechne. What do we make of the life and the impact of Ted Kennedy? Joining us for some thoughts, we're pleased to welcome to the program Jeff Jacoby, columnist with the Boston Globe, more at boston.com, and also jeffjacoby.com. Jeff, good to talk to you. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Rob. Good to be with you again.
Well, it's ironic because you've been doing a lot of Ted Kennedy talk over the past week or so.
This somehow turned into a Ted Kennedy Palooza week for me, quite unanticipated.
Well, yeah, and obviously, I mean, he'd been not well, but he had bounced back, and he had returned to his duties as a senator. He was fighting this brain cancer, but you had a piece a few days ago suggesting he ought to resign. What was the gist of that?
Well, in a nutshell, I had a column on Sunday that jumped off a story that actually was triggered last week because of something that Senator Kennedy, or I suppose now we might wonder if it wasn't really some of Senator Kennedy's aides did. A letter was sent. He sent a letter, or a letter was sent in his name to the governor of Massachusetts, urging a change in state law that governs how a vacancy in the Senate seat would be filled. And in a nutshell, he had called on the legislature to re-empower the governor of the state to appoint a successor to hold the seat temporarily. 5 years ago, when there was a Republican governor, he had urged legislators then to strip the governor of the power to name legislators. So it was politics right to the end. In his letter to the governor, he wrote that what he cares about most is that Massachusetts not be without representation in the Senate, that the state have its full complement of voices and votes on Capitol Hill. And so I wrote a column on Sunday saying if that's really what he feels and really what he means, then he ought to do the right thing now and resign, because he clearly has not been able to function as a senator who is at full power. He had missed virtually every vote so far this year. He was almost never seen in Washington anymore. And so I wrote that the proper thing for him to do now would be to resign and to let the political process choose a successor. Less than 24 hours later came word, maybe a little bit more than 24 hours later, came word that he had died.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a big story internationally. Talk about how big a story it is where you are.
Well, he will be lying, as they say, lying in repose in Boston tomorrow at the Kennedy Library, the John F. Kennedy Library, which is on the campus of University of Massachusetts in Boston, and as it happens, just across the street from where I work at the Boston Globe. His body will be lying there for 2 days, and I remember what it was like about 10 years ago when John F. Kennedy Jr. died in a plane crash. The lines that stretched a good half a mile down the road of people waiting in line just to pay their respect for John Kennedy Jr., who was, his accomplishments in life had been, a pale shadow of what his father and his uncle had done. So I can only imagine what it's going to be like in Boston for the next couple of days. There's going to be a funeral, memorial service at a Catholic church here in Boston. And only then is he going to be buried in Arlington National Cemetery in Washington, D.C. This has been, for Massachusetts, the Kennedys have been, as close to royalty as we get in this country. I know the Canadians have a sovereign who actually is royalty.
Yeah.
In this country, we don't hold much with kings and queens and princes. But if anybody or any family could be said to have come close to it over the last decades, it was the Kennedys of Massachusetts. And while there are certainly Kennedys who continue, there's even Ted Kennedy's son is a congressman from Rhode Island. He was the last of the storied band of Kennedy brothers, Joe Kennedy, John Kennedy, Bobby Kennedy, and now Ted Kennedy, the last of them to go.
How are you, personally handling this today, talking about this today? It becomes difficult when someone is polarizing, whether it's on the left or right, but as polarizing as this dies, because political opponents had very strong feelings about the person, obviously realized the tragedy when anybody dies and what family members are going through, et cetera. Do you feel compelled to pull your punches a little bit today?
Well, I have to say I have certainly been reminded in recent days just how strongly and how emotionally people connect and think about and react to or have reacted to Ted Kennedy. For writing the column saying that he should resign, I got both the very supportive mail and some vehement, bitter mail from people telling me that I would burn in hell for having said such a thing. So the knowledge that that he was really at death's doorstep, and then the discovery this morning when we woke up that he had passed away during the night, couldn't help but trigger all kinds of curious emotions. For me in particular, you know, Rob, I'm politically conservative, and I work in a very liberal industry at a very liberal newspaper in a very liberal environment in the United States. I'm, you know, I'm something of the conservative island in a very big liberal ocean around here. All of us who are regular columnists on the Boston Globe's op-ed page wrote a short piece for tomorrow's paper, and I couldn't see any reason to try to sugarcoat or disguise the fact that I really disagreed with him profoundly about almost every important issue. And so that's what I wrote in my piece for tomorrow. I said that by my lights, he was wrong on most of the great issues of our time, and I talked about some of them. But I ended by saying something that I also believed and do believe, which is that as profoundly wrong as I often thought he was, I very much admired the fact that he was not a politician who said one thing and meant another. You knew where he stood. You knew what he believed. He was if anything, as liberal as I can be conservative. And he made no bones about it. There was never any talk with Ted Kennedy about flip-flops and does he really mean it and the kinds of things that are, for example, have so often been said about the other senator, or now the only senator from Massachusetts, John Kerry. With Ted Kennedy, there was none of that. He was liberal to the core. He wore it proudly. He was open about it, very sincere. And though I often thought he was dead wrong, I admired the fact that that he never made any secret about what his convictions were, and that he, at least in his legislative life, he attempted to live up to them.
It was 40 years ago last month, the tragic events of that fateful night, the Chappaquiddick incident, as they call it, occurred. It was July of 1969, a very long time ago. As we talk about Ted Kennedy and everything he accomplished in his life, his lengthy political career, where does that incident fit in?
It was huge. It happened as by strange coincidence on the same night that Apollo 11 went to the moon, the first Apollo mission that landed Americans on the moon. But in the political world, the tragedy of Chappaquiddick was enormous. In the end, he was convicted of leaving the scene of an accident. It was a misdemeanor. The sentence was suspended. It's not like he ever served any prison time. But I think everybody except the most ardent Kennedy loyalists understood that his behavior had been pretty disgraceful. He himself later even said that he had behaved reprehensibly. That and one other thing, I would say, destroyed any hope that he ever had of becoming president. When he did decide to run for president, it was in 1980. He challenged Jimmy Carter, who had been elected 4 years earlier. Carter was a terrible president, and Kennedy was right to perceive that as a window of opportunity. But early on in his challenge of Jimmy Carter for the Democratic nomination, he gave an interview with, I think it was CBS News in Boston, and he sat down with a journalist named Roger Mudd, who asked the obvious first question, which was, why do you want to be president? And he gave the most stumbling, incoherent, inarticulate answer, much more stumbling and incoherent than I have ever found him in person. Between the two, the scandal of Chappaquiddick in 69, and then 11 years later, the complete inability to explain why he was running for president, he doomed his own chances of holding that office. But as many people have been saying, and as I'm sure will be spoken of in the days ahead, though he lost or never had a chance to achieve the office that his brother John achieved and that his brother Bobby was killed trying to achieve, he achieved far more influence and importance and significance in the United States Senate. He really did turn out to be a Senate man, a legislator, not an executive. And especially for those who shared Kennedy's politics, and there are a lot of liberals and a lot of Democrats in this country, it may well be that his failure to reach the White House ended up advancing their causes far more than would otherwise have been the case.
Yeah, well, and certainly for his colleagues in the Senate, I mean, they're going to miss him for a lot of reasons, but, you know, politically speaking, are they a little weaker without a statesman like that, sort of the elder statesman of the party, someone who knows the ropes in Washington, someone who can get stuff done. Does it hurt them politically not to have him?
I think it has been hurting them for the last 15 months. He was diagnosed with brain cancer in, I believe it was May of 2008. And for most of the months since then, he has been absent. He hasn't been there. I mentioned before, he's missed 97%. He had missed 97% of the votes that were taken in the Senate so far this year. So it's not as though they are only now going to begin to feel his absence. Presumably his Senate staff, which has always been very highly regarded and very high-powered, will begin to make other arrangements for themselves. But, you know, within a matter of months at most, and, you know, perhaps just weeks, you know, at the other end, there will be a new senator from Massachusetts. Washington and Congress have seen many storage figures come and go over the years. Few of them served in the Congress as long as Kennedy did. He holds the number three position for a length of service as a United States senator, nearly 47 years. But there have been, you know, there have been greats before him, and there will be greats after him. Every congressional career eventually comes to an end. It's the country and the political system and Congress itself that keeps on going. And Americans will adjust to this loss just as they have adjusted to every previous loss.
Now, who do you expect will big shoes to fill, but who do you think will fill them?
Well, that depends. If Massachusetts goes to a special election, then there's absolutely no way to say. There are any number of Massachusetts pals who are interested in running for this seat. They've been salivating for it for years. Several members of the congressional delegation, such as Edward Markey, former congressman, such as the state's attorney general is a woman named Martha Coakley, who's very interested in running. There might even be a Republican who will run to be the sacrificial lamb. On the other hand, if the legislature now posthumously passes the law that Kennedy wrote that letter about last week, or that his staff sent in the letter about last week, and restores to the governor of Massachusetts the power to make a temporary appointment, then there'll be very interesting politics, because the question will be, will this temporary appointment be a prelude to somebody running in his own right? Will the guy have to, or the woman have to, promise not to run for the office, for a full term in the office, as a condition of being appointed? Massachusetts, more than most other states, maybe Illinois and Louisiana come close to it in the intricacy and the scheming of politics that takes place. If Governor Deval Patrick, who is the Democratic governor of Massachusetts, is empowered to appoint a successor, a temporary successor, I would expect it to be someone of the elder statesman category, Michael Dukakis, for example, mm-hmm. someone like that. But if the law remains as it is now, and an election is set up, it will be a free-for-all. And you would expect nothing less, as you say, from a state that sent Ted Kennedy to the Senate for 46 years. The battle to succeed him will be a spirited one.
Yeah. Well, I guess Mitt Romney has higher aspirations, it would seem. There's always Paul Cellucci, who we grew quite fond of during his time as ambassador to Canada. But I guess there aren't many serious Republican challengers in that state, are there?
You know, once upon a time, Massachusetts and all of New England were very Republican territory. That changed. This is now the most Democratic territory in the country. You never know how the political pendulum will eventually swing. Right now, though, you're right. Mitt Romney is probably the best-known Republican in Massachusetts. He's obviously interested in running for president, challenging Barack Obama in 2012. In any case, it's a Democratic governor. So whether there's an election or whether it's an appointment, the next senator from Massachusetts is going to be what Ted Kennedy always was, a Democrat.
All right. Well, Jeff, we'll leave it there. Folks can read more again, jeffjacoby.com, and also the Boston Globe can be found via boston.com. Jeff, always a pleasure. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks so much, Rob.
Take care. Jeff Jacoby in Boston. He's a columnist for the Boston Globe.
Listen to The World Tonight, weeknights from 6:30 till 9 on AM 770 CHQR. A chorus